Okay, so in the first half of today, or in the morning, I convinced you that it's possible to integrate in, if you think about first order formalism for gravity, it's possible to integrate in and create a first order formalism just a half of the spin connection of Einstein-Cartan theory. This is amazing fact in four dimensions, but it's true. I gave you several explanations. One is the conceptual explanation with decomposition of the curvature. Another one, which is like adding a topological term to Einstein-Cartan action to make it chiral. So there is this chiral Einstein-Cartan, which involves the frame and the chiral half of the spin connection. And I'm going to massage it, actually, for most of the remaining time, I'm going to do some massaging of this chiral Einstein-Cartan. So one good thing to do, whenever you have chiral, whenever anything is chiral, it's good to rewrite it in spinner notations, because things usually become much more clear whenever you talk about self-dual, anti-self-dual. Spinorial notations is the right way to see what's happening. So let me quickly explain you that. Let me remind you that spinners in four dimensions, so they are irreducible representations of Lorentz group. They are fundamental, so they are the basic building blocks of any other irreducible representation of Lorentz. They have two types. I'll call them S plus and S minus. They are both two-dimensional. So in GR, or relativist notation, it's an object with unprimed spinner index, big A, and a prime spinner index. In particle physics notation, this would be dotted undotted, but this doesn't matter. And so I'll refer to them as objects in S plus and S minus, and unprimed and primed. Then the other basic things to remember about this spinner stuff is that a vector representation of Lorentz is the product of S plus S minus. Both are two-dimensional. If you take a product, you get a four-dimensional representation. That's your vector representation. The adjoint representation, well, another fact is that any irreducible representation of Lorentz is of the form you take bunch of S plus, bunch of unprimed spinner, and symmetrize them in the spinner indices. This is S plus to some power n, and then you also take primed and symmetrize them to some power k. The adjoint representation in this language is the sum of S plus 2, S minus 2. S plus 2 is three-dimensional, this is three-dimensional as well, so this is the Lie algebra of Lorentz group. Now, in this spinner form, the spin connection splits into its self-dual, anti-self-dual parts. So omega, I'm suppressing the space-time indices, it's a one form, but I'm writing the indices I, j, which are now converted into spinner indices. I becomes AA prime, B becomes BB prime. And the spin connection becomes an object. It has the self-dual part, which is epsilon in the primed indices, omega symmetric in AB in the unprimed, and similarly, the anti. So this is self-dual, this is anti-self-dual part. So these are, this is the full spin connection, and we also have the co-frame field in the spinner notations. It becomes an object, which is a one form with two spinner indices of different type. Now, I can rewrite my chiral Einstein-Cartan. Remember that what it was in the usual notations, going back. This is the Einstein-Cartan in which you either insert a self-dual projector in front of the curvature, or you take self-dual projection of the connection. So let me rewrite that in spinner notations. One gets this action. So this RAB of omega, this is the curvature of self-dual part of omega, which is so the curvature, so therefore of omega AB, which is the self-dual part of the spin connection. And this block sigma is a composite block. You take two co-frame fields, you multiply them with the wedge product, and then you sum over the primed indices. So this is the self-dual part of sigma sigma ij two form. So this is your chiral Einstein-Cartan. Again, chiral in the sense that it only involves the self-dual part of the spin connection. And actually, this is a very nice formalism. As I already said, the number of connections that you integrated in to create a first order formulation is just right. So this formalism leads to very nice perturbation theory around flat space or around any background. The perturbation theory is very nice. It's really powerful formalism. Okay, now I will do something else with it. So as in usual Einstein-Cartan, it was possible to integrate frame out to obtain a pure connection formulation. And we saw that there is a closed form pure connection Lagrangian in the non-chiral case. And the same trick is possible in the chiral case. We'll obtain a pure connection formulation with just a half of the spin connection, with just a chiral spin connection sitting there. The steps you follow, you get a cubic equation that you need to solve for the frame. Explicit solution in closed form is not possible in this formulation. It will be possible in formulation with Lagrange multipliers, which I'll explain later. But you can solve perturbatively around the constant curvature background. This is best done using spinner notations. You get a remarkably simple Lagrangian this way. Very, very simple Lagrangian, which is, so the this field A is just the perturbation of your self-dual part of the spin connection. It's a one-form. This is the one-form index. This is the Lie algebra index. So it's a guy with four spinner indices. And then you apply the exterior derivative operator with the background connection. You sum over primed indices. You obtain an object with four spinner unprimed indices. You symmetrize, and then you square. This is very, very simple. Linearized Lagrangian. I should also say that it has a sign, and the sign is, so for lambda bigger than zero, it's this shape of Lagrangian. At the maximally symmetric background, your Lagrangian, the Hessian, is negative, as we had in the non-chiral pure connection formalism. This is the type of Lagrangian you get here. And we computed the Hessian. You see that it has a sign in Euclidean signature. It has a sign. And the sign corresponds to negative, well, to shape pointing downwards. Actually, in this formalism, it becomes very easy once you see Lagrangian like this, which is remarkably simple Lagrangian describing gravitons, I must emphasize. If you write a Lagrangian describing gravitons in the usual metric formalism, well, it's much more complicated than this. This is a remarkably simple description of gravitons. And one can count.
Is it Penrose description?
No, I think Penrose, he does something else. He describes gravitons using Weyl, the self-dual part of Weyl. So it's not really, no. It's a pure connection, it's a connection description of gravitons, but it's remarkably simple. If you take the self-dual part of the spin connection.
But the guy you wrote is Weyl.
No. Well, the Lagrangian that I wrote is Weyl squared, yeah. What's in the bracket is Weyl, self-dual part of Weyl, yeah. Remember that in the pure connection non-chiral, it was also Weyl squared. Okay, so let's just quick count of number of propagating modes. It becomes really very easy to see what is propagating here. So if you look at this Lagrangian, this connection A it sits in this space, it lives in this space. S plus S minus are vectors, S plus 2 is the self-dual part of Lie algebra. This representation is not irreducible. You decompose it into irreducibles. This is 8-dimensional part, this is 4-dimensional part. And then you find that the way diffeos act here, they simply shift this part. So the linearized Lagrangian is simply independent of these four components of the connection. This is diff invariance, very simple. Connection gets just shifted, and Lagrangian is independent of this part. So it's actually a function null of just 8 components. And then of these 8, 3 are Lagrange multipliers for 3 constraints, and you get 8 minus 3 minus 3 is 2 propagating degrees of freedom. So it's a very simple count. Everything is completely clear. What propagates, and as I said, you get very nice perturbation theory in this language. Now, let me describe another formulation which is available in this chiral land, is called Plibanski Kyle formulation. And we're going to do very similar trick as we've done with non-Kyle Einstein Cartan. With non-Kyle Einstein Cartan, we introduced a new two-form field and then added Lagrange multipliers to guarantee that it comes from the frame. We're going to do exactly the same here. As in the non-Kyle case, this changes the nature of the soldering, right? The two-form field, the type of soldering that it describes is very different from the type of soldering one form co-frame describes. The same is going to happen here in the Kyle case, but actually there's going to be very beautiful and rich geometry of this new type of soldering. So when we change the viewpoint and describe geometry by two-form, in the Kyle case, it's going to be really, really beautiful and deep. And I want to explain some of this geometry. So as a first step, let me introduce Lagrange multipliers. So I'm just rewriting my Kyle Einstein Cartan. I introduced an object B, well, I want it to be, after I impose the constraints, B must become E A A prime, E B A prime. I want it to come from the frame field, but I will impose that it comes from the frame field with Lagrange multipliers. So B in this Lagrangian becomes an independent field. F is the curvature of A, which is my self-dual part of the spin connection. And I added Lagrange multipliers. This Lagrange multiplier field in spin annotations is required to be completely symmetric. And I'll rewrite this Lagrangian in SO3 notations, which will be easier to grasp. But already here I can count the number of components that I have in my two-form field. BAB is a two-form with values in the self-dual part of Lorentz-Lie algebra. So it's 6 times 3 components in B. And the co-frame contains 16 components. But when I form sigma, which is E, which E with primed indices contracted, this object is clearly invariant with respect to anti-self-dual rotations, because if you rotate A prime, this sigma doesn't change. So 3 of them are lost in this object. This object is really just 13 components. 10 in the metric plus orientation of this frame. So anyway, this is 13 components. And so I want to go from 18 to 13, and I need 5 constraints. And this field, which is completely symmetric in its 4 spinner indices, is just 5 components. It's a spin 2 representation of SO3. It's just it's 5 dimensional. So this is the number of constraints I have. So this is the right Lagrangian. I haven't proved yet that the constraints it gives me are correct, but I'll prove it later. Let me just write it first. And let me also rewrite this Lagrangian in more familiar SO3 notations. So I depart from spinner notations now. I replace a symmetric pair of spinner indices AB with a single SO3 index I. And I get this Lagrangian, BF, psi ij, lambda term, bibj. Here now f is the usual curvature of an SO3 connection, and psi ij is trace free, psi ij delta ij is equal to 0. And now I want to explain the geometry that this Lagrangian, now it turns out that it's possible, so there is a new soldering here, the object that relates the internal bundle and the tangent bundle is now this two form, with values in the Lie algebra. It turns out that there is a beautiful geometry there, which I want to explain. I'll call this a chiral soldering form. So what is happening geometrically now is that we have a vector bundle with three-dimensional fiber. This is this R3. So I'll call that vector bundle S. We have a connection, SO3 connection in it. We also, it's SO3 connection because we have a metric delta ij in the fibers. We have an SO3 connection. Well, in the case of Lorentzian signature, because we're doing things that are self-dual here, this R3 is really this self-dual part of Lorentz. In the case of Lorentzian signature, everything is complex, complex valued. So it's not SO3, it's SO3 complex valued, SO3C. And one need to worry about reality conditions, but that I'll worry about later. And the object B, you can now think about it, so B is this BI mu nu, you can think about it as an object in which you insert R3 vector into this index, and you get a 2 form. Of course, this object is no longer an isomorphism because this is 3-dimensional space, this is 6-dimensional space, so it's a map. It's an embedding from R3 to lambda 2. And I'll call it the chiral soldering form. It's soldering in the sense that it relates geometry of the vector bundle to the geometry of the base. Remember that in the case of usual soldering with the coframe, the metric geometry of M came from the metric in the fibers. We had metric in the fiber, we had the soldering, and we simply pulled back metric in the fibers to the base, and this was our metric in the base. Here the situation is much more subtle and interesting because there is a metric, but now this is not a map into the tangent bundle, this is map into lambda 2. We cannot really bring the metric down. So I should explain you the geometry. And this geometry is related to beautiful fact that Hochstar, knowledge of Hochstar in 4 dimensions determines the conformal metric. This is a beautiful geometric fact. So the geometry of that soldering is based on this geometric fact. And let me explain you this geometric fact. So it will be a collection of facts, some of which I'll prove, some of which I'll just state. So there is a very simple fact that Hochstar on middle degree forms, in 4D, but actually this is a statement that is true in any even dimension, Hochstar middle degree forms is conformally invariant. So if metric goes to metric rescaled by a conformal factor, Hochstar goes to Hochstar, it doesn't change. So Hochstar is conformally invariant. It cannot be that Hochstar can know about all of the metric. Right? Because in particular, if you change the metric, Hochstar is unaware of this. But it turns out that in 4D, the knowledge of the Hochstar on middle forms is equivalent to knowledge of the conformal metric. So Hochstar knows everything about the conformal metric. This is a very powerful fact. So let's see why this can be true. And I give you several proofs. So one is a conceptual proof. The conceptual proof is that in 4 dimensions, on 2 forms, we have the wedge product metric. Right? We can take, if you have B1, B2 in lambda 2, you can take B1, wedge B2. This is a 4 form. And then we can choose some, we assume that manifold is orientable, there is some volume form, we divide it by V. And, this is our B1, B2. I'll call it the wedge product metric. It's only a conformal metric because all volume forms are related by conformal rescaling, so you cannot really... this metric is only known to you up to conformal rescalings. This is why I call it conformal metric. So, but this conformal metric is there. Now, and then there are some very basic facts about it. So first, the wedge product metric has signature 3-3. This wedge product metric, it's important to understand that it's available to you even if you don't have the usual metric. This metric is always there on any 4-dimensional manifold. This metric has signature 3-3. Now, if you have a metric Hodge operator, and therefore its eigenspaces lambda plus, lambda minus, you can ask yourself, what does the wedge product metric restrict to in lambda plus, lambda minus? And then this is signature dependent. So in Euclidean signature, the wedge product metric on lambda plus, lambda minus is definite, so meaning all the signs are the same. You see, lambda plus, lambda minus is 3-dimensional spaces, right? And definite just means that signs are all the same in Euclidean signature. In Lorentzian signature, this metric is complex on lambda plus, lambda minus, and moreover, the metric on lambda minus is complex conjugate of that on lambda plus. In split signature, it's indefinite on lambda plus lambda minus, meaning two signs are one and the third sign is different. Okay. And now I will, so I'm trying to prove that knowledge of the Hodge is knowledge of the metric. Knowledge of the Hodge is knowledge of the split. So Hodge tells me that lambda 2 is lambda plus lambda minus. And as I said, the signature of the wedge product metric is, the nature of the wedge product metric on these spaces is signature dependent. So we'll have a list. But then, and actually Hodge is equivalent to the split. It's because if you know the split, you know Hodge. So I can encode my Hodge into the choice of lambda plus and lambda minus distribution in this six-dimensional space. So I can encode Hodge by saying that different Hodges correspond to different points in the Grassmannian of the choices of three-plane in six-dimensional space. Again, this is six-dimensional space. This is three-dimensional subspace in it. I can choose the three-dimensional space differently, and that encodes the star. And now I can write down what is the space of Grassmannians. Well, this is the usual. You take the signature 3-3 metric. This is because our wedge product metric is signature 3-3. And then this 0-3-3, of course, it moves all possible choices of lambda 2 in our six-dimensional space are related to each other by 0-3-3. And this is why it's 0-3-3 coset. And the stabilizer of a particular choice is you have 0-3 rotating inside here and 0-3 rotating inside there. So this is the stabilizer of a particular. So therefore, the all possible different Hodges in Euclidean signature are this. In Lorentzian signature, they are this. The nature of the stabilizer will change because, as I said, once you fix depending on the signature, the wedge product metric that gets induced on these spaces is changing. In particular, it's Euclidean in this case, it's complex in this case, and it's split. It's indefinite in this case. So these are different Lagrangian, different Grassmannians, different cosets. And the last point of the proof is that we have an isomorphism between SL33 and SL4R. This is the sometimes called twister isomorphism. Therefore, in these cosets, we can replace 0-3-3 everywhere by the SL4R. And we can also replace the stabilizers by every one of the stabilizers is actually a Lorentz group. We can replace them by Lorentz groups. So you see that these cosets of different Hodge operators are just the cosets of conformal metrics in each case, because these are the cosets of conformal metrics. SL4R relates all possible conformal metrics to each other, and this is a stabilizer of a given conformal metric, of a given metric. So they're just cosets of conformal metrics. So this is one conceptual proof why Hodge involves, encodes the conformal metric. I will also give a
So is it SL4 and not GL4 because of the...
Because conformal, yeah. All metrics would be GL4, but these are conformal metrics, yeah. So in particular, they are nine-dimensional cosets. Every one of them is nine-dimensional, not ten-dimensional. Now, I want to also give a very concrete proof. I'll write you the metric that the Hodge describes. To write it, so... Let's assume that we know Hodge in two forms. As I said, this is the same as knowing which two forms are self-dual and which are anti-self-dual. So it's the same as knowing how to decompose B into B plus B minus, because then Hodge is just the change of sign in front of B minus part. So both lambda plus, lambda minus are three-dimensional. Let's choose a basis. Well, let's take three two forms in lambda plus. It's clear that if we take three linearly independent two forms and declare that this spans lambda plus, we know what lambda plus, we defined what lambda plus is. And then lambda minus is just the orthogonal complement of that with respect to the wedge product metric. So basically, Hodge can be encoded into choice of basis. You just change take three two forms, you call them self-dual, and this tells you what your Hodge is. But then if you have a basis in lambda plus, then this is explicit expression for the conformal metric. It's constructed like this. It's a metric pairing of two vector fields. What you do, you insert one vector field into Bi. You insert another vector field into, well, Bj. Remember that I, J, K are all 1, 2, 3. And so you wedge one form, and a two form. This is a top form. And then you take epsilon ijk, so this is just cyclic permutation. And this is called Urbanski metric. It's defined here modular conformal rescalings. You see, I need to divide it by some volume form, but different volume forms are related by conformal rescaling. So this is why it's only a conformal metric. One can do slightly better, but I will not explain that. In principle, there is also a full metric defined, but I don't need it now. And this is the metric, one can check, which makes the triple of two forms that you chose self-dual. That's the metric that does it. And it's the unique conformal metric which does it, and this is the expression for it. Okay, so we have proved that, well, actually, no, we haven't proved this, but this is just a statement that characterizes this Urbanski formula. Further, I will not prove it. The signature of the Urbanski metric depends on the signature of the wedge product metric among the BIs. If what you get among the BIs, because there are three BIs, you can take wedge products of them. If you get definite, if you get wedge products of the same sign, you get Euclidean signature Urbanski metric. If you get indefinite products, if you get different signs, this is a split signature Urbanski metric. If your metric that you get is complex, so you are taking really complex Bs, but Bs satisfy this reality condition, namely your Bs are wedge orthogonal to complex conjugate Bs, then the Urbanski metric is going to have a Lorentzian signature. That's the way to encode different signatures into these Bs. And remember, I'm doing all this because my B, I, is my soldering. This is the object that does soldering in this chiral case. It's a two-form with values in R3. And I'm explaining you the geometry of soldering. This is the way my soldering form encodes the geometry, the metric geometry. Okay, so now I do some more definitions which are appropriate here. So now I can complete the definition of what is chiral soldering form. So imagine I have a vector bundle over my space-time with three-dimensional fibers. The fibers are equipped with either definite, indefinite, or complex metric. And I will require that this vector bundle is of the same topological type as the bundle of self-dual two forms on M, because I want this soldering form to relate these two bundles, bundle of self-dual two forms and my R3 bundle. So they have the same topological type. Then my map B from S to lambda 2 is called the chiral soldering form. If the wedge product metric on lambda 2, so this map has some image, and I can compute the wedge product metric on the image. So if this wedge product metric on the image is of the right type, namely definite, indefinite, or complex. So remember that there is some metric of some type that I fix in the fibers, and my good map B will be the one which reproduces me the same metric of the same type on the image in lambda 2. Moreover, in the complex case, the chiral soldering form is required to satisfy this condition.
You mean equal zero or proportional to delta I?
This is equal to zero.
Yes,
of course, yeah. All self-dual must be orthogonal to anti-self-dual. So this is nine conditions here. They're reality conditions. And so then the chiral soldering form as defined, it defines a conformal metric of appropriate signature on which it is self-dual. This motivates this definition. And there is another definition or another requirement, that very natural requirement that can be imposed on the chiral soldering form. So I will say that it satisfies the constraints, or the metricity constraints. Well, you see, to explain this definition, I need to remind you that we have a metric in the fibers, and we also get some metric, wedge product metric on the base, right? On lambda 2. We can pull back via the soldering map the wedge product metric on lambda 2 and compare it with the metric here. It's very natural to demand that they agree. Concretely, this is the condition that Bi wedge Bj is delta ij. So this is the agreement of the two metrics. If these two metrics agree, I'll say that this object B, the soldering form, satisfies the constraints. And now, a theorem which I will not prove, but there is very nice geometric proof. When a chiral soldering form satisfies the constraints, it contains no more information than that of a metric, plus a choice of an orthogonal basis in lambda plus. In other words, there exists a frame or coframe such that this chiral soldering form is just a self-dual part of E wedge E. This is one statement. And as I said, there is a geometric proof of this. Another statement is that when the chiral soldering form satisfies the constraints, the torsion-free equation, namely that the covariant derivative of B with respect to some SO3 connection A, it has a unique solution. Moreover, this solution A coincides with the self-dual part of the metric torsion-free spin connection for the coframe determined by B. So basically, when you have this chiral soldering form and when it satisfies this constraint, it is just the coframe. There is no more information in it. And moreover, the natural torsion-free connection is just the self-dual part of the spin connection. So everything is as nice as you want it. And then it's clear why this formalism, which goes under the name of Plebansky formalism, it's clear why it reproduces GR. Now we have complete understanding. So again, the Lagrangian in this formalism is that we have a two-form field connection. This Lagrange multiplies. This is the Lagrangian. Now you vary with respect to B, you get this equation. You vary with respect to connection, you get this equation, kind of torsion-free. You vary with respect to Lagrange multipliers, you get this equation. These were our constraints on the B. We said that they guarantee that there is no more information in B than in the metric. Then this tells us that A is just the self-dual part of the spin connection. And this becomes the Einstein equation. This equation will tell us that curvature of the self-dual part of the spin connection is self-dual as a two-form, which we know from the decomposition of the curvature is just the Einstein condition. So geometrically, it's all very beautiful. It all works. I should also say that this formalism, this Plebansky formalism, and these equations here, is actually a very, very efficient way of computing Riemann curvature. Remember, I told you that if you work with tetrads, tetrads are much more efficient than the usual Christoffel connection. This is even more efficient. For example, if you want to do the exercise of spherically symmetric metric and compute the Riemann curvature, this is just really few lines. This is so efficient. Okay. Now let me do manipulations of the type I was doing with non-chiral story. So I will explain how to obtain a pure connection formulation starting from this Lagrangian. The idea will be to integrate everything out apart from the connection and see what happens. And I'll be quick because we've done all this in the non-chiral case. So first of all, I will, instead of keeping the matrix in front of BB in this form, I will give it a name. It will be MIJ. And then I will add a Lagrange multiplier, which will say that the trace of M is lambda. So this is the first step. This is a Lagrangian which depends on BA, matrix M, and a Lagrange multiplier field mu. That's what it is. And now in this form, it's very easy to integrate everything out. The first step is integrating out B. The equation for B is this. You solve it. B is M minus 1F. You substitute it back you get m minus 1 ff plus constraint on m. Then you vary with respect to m, you get this equation, m minus 1 xm is equal to identity times mu, where x is a matrix of wedge products of the curvature. You solve it. There is no non-triviality in solving it here, unlike in the non-chiral case. It's very easy. M is just the square root of x divided by mu. X is a matrix, so it's a matrix square root, but still it makes sense. Well, I'm assuming, of course, that it's all the matrices are invertible. Square root makes sense, and I'll worry about whether this creates any complications later. Now this is just a formal solution. The constraint on M gives mu. Mu is that. So you finally determine full M. You substitute it into the action and get this pure connection, a chiral pure connection formalism. It's very similar to the non-chiral case, but remember in the non-chiral case we had additional epsilon tensor there. So this is actually simpler action.
X denote
X. X is Fi Fj. The wedge product, yeah. So this is a matrix, symmetric matrix, which is four form valued. Well, you can say it's divided by V, and then you multiply everything by V, and by homogeneity, it doesn't matter what V is. So that's the way to think about it. That's the way to make sense of it. But so it's just this trace square root of X, and then you can check whether this pure connection action is indeed whether it has the properties you want from it. So first you evaluate it on the maximally symmetric background. You get the value you expect. And second, you linearize it on the maximally symmetric background, and then you find that Lagrangian that I wrote there. We had very nice, simple, pure connection Lagrangian in spinner form here. That's the Lagrangian you get by linearizing this trace square root of x. So it is the right Lagrangian. So this is one manipulation that you can do.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
On the maximally symmetric backgrounds, is that a situation where this matrix isn't invertible?
Yeah, it is invertible. It's just delta ij.
Delta ij.
Yeah, it's just that's delta.
Okay, so it's a bit hard to make it non-invertible, is it?
Yeah, you need to go pretty far from the maximally symmetric to make it non-invertible, yes.
Non-zero cosmological constant.
Yeah, of course, I always mean non-zero cosmological constant. All these pure connection manipulations are only possible for non-zero lambda. If lambda is zero, you see, there is lambda in front of the Lagrangian, 1 over lambda in front, so it just doesn't.
Yeah, but so everything goes, everything goes wrong if you have...
Yeah, everything goes wrong, yes. You get 0 over 0 if you try to send lambda to 0. And another remark is that... I have time, so I can make it. So first remark is that all signs here are the same as in the non-chiral formalism. So lambda bigger than 0, Euclidean action is non-negative. This is clear from this. It's integral of square of something. The action is non-negative. And moreover, on these backgrounds on which it's easy to linearize, I call them maximally symmetric, but actually there is more, the shape, so I want to draw this shape. So really, well, it's kind of field space. We know that it's non-negative, so it's here. And we also know that, well, actually, of course, I'm not saying that it's really that. I cannot prove that it's that, but it may be that. What I know about it is that it's bigger than 0, and on some simple enough backgrounds, it is directed down. It's concave or convex. Yeah.
Well, it's also multiplied by sigma,
right? I'm talking about Euclidean. For Euclidean, yeah. For Lorentzian, the story is more complicated because, yeah, so. We're interested in these Lagrangians, typically in Euclidean signature, when we want to do path integral, right? We're interested in how Lagrangian behaves, how action behaves in the field space. This is the question appropriate for Euclidean path integral. And so I'm saying that this pure connection...
So you're saying IS in Euclidean space becomes real?
No. Sigma sigma is plus one in Euclidean signature. So the square root of sigma is just absent in Euclidean signature. Lagrangian is real. I'm saying that S is real in Euclidean signature and positive. And moreover, at these critical points, which I'll explain what they are, Lagrangian is like.
In Lorentzian signature, you have the I, so e to the is is also real. So why do you?
No, Lagrangian is real in Lorentzian signature as well. Simply, that guy is actually purely imaginary in Lorentzian signature because I'm taking some wedge products, and these wedge products, remember, in Lorentzian signature are actually complex, and in fact, they are purely imaginary. So in fact, the Lagrangian, we just rewrote the Einstein-Hilbert Lagrangian. We've done many manipulations to it, but it's still the Einstein-Hilbert Lagrangian. It's still real, even though not manifestly so. Even in Lorentzian signature, it's real. But there is more work to show that.
You mean after you?
After, yeah, on shell. Well, there are, of course, reality conditions to be imposed, yeah. On reality conditions, it becomes real, possibly modular total divergence terms, because we've added some total divergence, purely imaginary terms. But it's basically real Lagrangian, even in Lorentzian signature. Okay, so this is the shape of this action, which is very nice. And I can also explain what are the easy backgrounds for this formalism to expand around. The class of backgrounds is actually much bigger than the maximally symmetric ones. What is easy to expand about is the backgrounds on which F is just a multiple of this B. So this is the class of backgrounds which on which Fi wedge Fj is proportional to delta Ij. I can convince you that these backgrounds correspond to self-dual Einstein metrics. So they are just the gravitational instantons. I'll explain that in a second. So in fact, the class of backgrounds on which it is easy to expand this action are gravitational instantons. It's bigger than maximally symmetric. All maximally symmetric, of course, is on maximally symmetric, all vial vanishes. On instantons, only half of vial vanishes. And let me explain why they're instantons. Well, I think I'll do it a bit later. Not just yet. Then another possibility that arises in this Klebanski formalism is one can easily modify gravitational theories. In all these reformulations, as I said, one can modify just by you take the Lagrangian of GR and then you basically screw it up and it corresponds to non-GR. So we saw that in the non-chiral formalism, the easy way to screw up the Lagrangian is to rewrite it in this form, BF plus matrix BB plus some function of M. The GR case corresponds to some given function, and then you change the function. And typically, for almost any change, you get a completely different theory with new propagating degrees of freedom. So let me analyze what kind of modifications I can obtain by doing it here in the chiral formalism. I also just take function of M and change it. One very interesting modification that I can take trace of m minus 1 instead of trace of m. It turns out that this modification describes self-dual GR. Its solutions are only instantons. Self-dual GR is simpler than full GR. It has smaller number of solutions, and its solutions are only instantons. So let me explain why. So this is a Lagrangian. As I said, we put here trace m minus 1. I integrated b out because b will be relevant here. So this is my Lagrangian without the b. And then you see basically my constraint here says that m minus 1, which is the matrix appearing here, its trace free part is free. I need to vary with respect to it, but the trace is constant. So therefore, this Lagrangian, I can rewrite it like that. The trace free part of m minus 1, I write it as a separate field sitting in front of f wedge f, and there is a trace part which I don't vary with, but the trace part, this part is just the topological Pontryagin class, so this is the topological term. And now to see why this is self-dual GR, I vary with respect to this psi. I see that the equation I get is f wedge f is equal to delta ij. And now this is an exercise in essentially Klebanski formalism to see why these are instantons. So F which F proportional to delta implies that if I construct the B, the two-form field, that my chiral soldering form, I just declare it to be F. This is the definition. Then my B will satisfy the constraints. Bi which Bj is proportional to delta ij. Also, my B is automatically my B is such that the connection is automatically torsion free because this is Bianchi identity. And therefore, I see that this is an equation of Plibanski formulation of GR with psi ij, which is the Weyl curvature, is equal to zero. So I know that the metric that is described by this B is anti-self-dual Einstein. Anyway, that's true. And so instantons are the easiest backgrounds in this chiral formalism to expand around. And you see you have a theory which has this Lagrangian. It's a theory whose solutions are gravitational instantons. Sorry, I forgot the lambda here. No, maybe I didn't. Well, but these are gravitational instantons with non-zero lambda, because I need non-zero lambda to define the metric from F. So anyway, this is a very simple Lagrangian of gravitational instantons of non-zero scalar curvature, which is available if you play these games with chiral formalism. Now, and just one more comment about this self-dual GR. Self-dual GR, what it does, it switches off some interactions present in GR. It's like full GR, but some interactions are switched off. This is very similar to self-dual Jan-Mills. Self-dual Jan-Mills is full Jan-Mills with some interactions turned off. So in the same way, and in particular, all solutions of self-dual theories are also solutions of the full theories. Now, another point that can be made in this context, more modifications are possible. Namely, let's now change f of m. Let's do rather generic change. Let's just write f of m to be an arbitrary function, arbitrary SO3 invariant function of m. There is a very big surprise. The surprise is that if you do that, unlike in the non-chiral formalism, this does not change the number of propagating degrees of freedom in the theory, which sounds impossible because we know that GR is a unique theory with two propagating degrees of freedom. But actually, this statement is true, and I can explain how it does not conflict. So first, I need to explain what propagating degrees of freedom are and why there is no conflict with the GR uniqueness. So by propagating degrees of freedom here, because I want to make this statement independently of the signature, I need to explain what propagating degrees of freedom are in Euclidean and split signature. And the way I'll count, I will not count solutions of some box phi type equation because there is no box in those signatures. But instead, I will just do Hamiltonian analysis. I'll do 3 plus 1 split of the theory. There is no, time is not preferred, but I can always slice it as in a 3 plus 1 way. And just count, there will still be constraints. I can just count how many functions on the slice I need to specify, how many free functions I need to specify to evolve the theory to the next slice. Even though the evolution is not hyperbolic, I can still talk about this. And then the number of propagating degrees of freedom in this modified theories is still 2. So amazingly and very surprisingly, this is still it's a very strange type of modifications of GR. We change the theory by changing this function m, but the theory does not change its character. It's still about the same propagating content. This is unlike all other possible screwing up of the actions in any other possible formalism. This is the only case when I know of this happening. But why does it not conflict GR uniqueness? Well, so the right statement to make is that, remember, with Lorentzian signature, everything is complex. And the statement one can make in Lorentzian signature is that if we complexify GR, then this theory, modified theory, well, modified theory, because all the fields in it are complex, it will describe the same number of complex propagating degrees of freedom. So it will be unmodified. Well, it's, how should I say it? It's it does not change the number of propagating degrees of freedom in the complexified sense. But there is a problem if you want to go to Lorentzian signature. This is only for the Lorentzian signature, you want these fields to be complex. For other signatures, they are real. You don't complexify. So if you want them to be, if you want to have Lorentzian signature, you want to make them complex. And then you want to impose some reality conditions to go on a real slice. You know that the right reality conditions to have metrics of Lorentzian signature is this, bi wedge bj star is equal to 0. And they, these conditions guarantee that the metric constructed from B is real Lorentzian. But actually, it turns out that these constraints that you want to impose are not compatible with evolution equations in this theory. You have some complex evolution equations. You want to fix a slice, but you want your slice to be compatible with evolution equations. And it turns out that the slice is only compatible with evolution equations when this is GR. So one cannot modify Lorentzian signature GR in this way. So Lorentzian GR is safe from these modifications. But still, it's very interesting that one can modify split and Euclidean signature Einstein condition in fact, in an infinite parametric number of ways, changing this f of m. And this is totally invisible in all other formulations. So this is something very strange, but this fact is true. One can modify Euclidean and split signature GR without changing the propagating content of it. But one cannot do it for the Lorentzian signature GR. Yes?
So could one just say, go to the Euclidean theory, calculate some correlation function?
Yes, one can do this,
and
yes.
And you might say, well, I'm just going to analytically continue that back to
one can do this, but
what, assume that that's, you know.
Yeah, what you will see is that the theory you get is incompatible with some facts you believe are true for any Lorentzian theory. Basically, it's not unitary.
Okay.
That's what you see. In, of course, you can do this correlation function, you can do this trick, but then what you see is non-unitary. Okay, so let me just do, well, actually, I should probably finish. Let me just say what is possible. One other thing that is possible is to go start doing field redefinitions and obtain BF type of formulation with a modified function F, but it still describes GR. This is in complete parallel with what was happening in the non-chiral case. So one can modify f of m without modifying the theory. Yes?
A question about the previous question. Uh-huh. So usually unitarity in Lorentzian is related to something specific in Euclidean. Like
so it will not be satisfied. That reflection positivity is not be, will not be satisfied by.
So you violate that? Right?
Yes. Yeah, by these modifications, yes.
So you shouldn't do that?
Well, yeah. Well, it's possible to do it. It's possible to do it. Yes, I agree. One, maybe one shouldn't do it. Yes, but well, at the same time, as I said, these Euclidean theories that they have modified, they have very nice properties. They're really indistinguishable from GR, Euclidean GR in their properties. They're very, very nice Euclidean theories. Okay, let me not say more. And the last statement is that it's possible to integrate out B. It's possible to integrate out all Lagrange multipliers from the and obtain BF type plus potential for B formulation. This is exactly in parallel with what was happening in non-chiral case, so I will not do it. I will just, so this is the Lagrangian one can get. It's a Lagrangian of BF type plus potential for the B. One can also further integrate out the connection by solving the torsion-free condition. And one can obtain second-order formalism in which just B field propagates. This has been done some years ago by me and Laurent. This procedure of integrating out A in the context when B does not satisfy metricity conditions. Okay, let me summarize this. Yes.
I guess you mentioned that, but you know, it leads to this, if you write the pure BF case and you. You know, that's what we did.
Yes.
All this non-metricity field,
yes.
Like a scalar field, you know, you realize they are algebraic. So essentially, you get gravity by some form of gauging instead mm-hmm. of imposing a strong constraint,
yeah.
which is hard.
Yeah.
The nice, you yeah. talk about that. The
yeah.
nicest potential is to say, well, these fields have a mass.
Yes.
And maybe the mass gap is big.
But this is not really what happens. I think it's more subtle. Something like that is what is
yeah,
happening.
Something
but
like that,
yeah.
Which the reason it's good because this is the way, for instance, people manage to put gauge theory on the lattice. This mm-hmm. is Wren's idea, is that, okay, I don't care about imposing exactly.
Lauren, sorry, I need to finish. I just have 5 minutes, and I still need to do the summary. Let's talk about this later. So, summary. Basic fact that you should take from this lecture series is that there are so many different formulations of GR. There's really so many. There's by far more than for any other physical theory. I'm surprised by this myself. And you see, I've been talking for 4 hours. And every 5 minutes, I give you another formulation. So, well, there is a lot. And yeah, this is definitely not true for any other physical theory. So there may be, there is some hint of some sort in this fact. This is experimental fact, but I don't know what it tells us. So this is one comment. Another comment is that every formulation, apart from metric, it uses some sort of soldering. It uses some sort of bundle over space-time, and this is the best way of thinking about it. And there is some form of soldering which relates this bundle to the tangent space. We can classify these formulations, these formalisms, according to the type of soldering that they provide. So possibilities we considered is a coframe. This is the most familiar one. Tangent vectors get mapped to Rn. There is a Cartan connection, slightly less familiar. Tangent vectors to the total space of Lorentz bundle over space-time gets mapped into Lie algebra of some bigger group. Pure spin connection formalism. The soldering, one can say that the soldering is just the connection, but in fact the metric is constructed from the curvature of the connection. So actually the object that gives you metric and gives you soldering is a map from, bivectors into the Lie algebra of Lorentz group. In the BF formalism, the soldering is very much the same. It's bivectors into Lorentz Lie algebra, and metric is constructed from the B. In Plibanski formalism, the soldering is, it becomes very interesting. The soldering is from the Lie algebra of SO3 into the space of two forms, and metric is constructed as the one that makes the image here self-dual. In the chiral-pure connection formalism, one can say that the soldering is the SO3 connection, but the metric is constructed from its curvature. In all these formalisms, apart from maybe Magdolo-Mansuri, one can make a second-order description just based on the main object from the above list. So all this list, there is some main object. There is a formalism which is just second-order field equations for that object. But of course, there is also some rewritings, and there is more than that. But in particular, there is a second-order description for every one of these fields. Another thing I didn't talk about, but it can be talked about, any of these descriptions of GR can be used as a starting point for unification. So what you do kind of naive unification. You say, okay, I have description of GR, and I just enlarge the number of, make the space of fields bigger. In the case of metric, this is clear. The only way to make a metric bigger, we go to bigger number of dimensions. This is Kaluza-Klein unification. In the case of when you have a bundle over space-time, you make the fiber bigger. That's the type of unification you do. And so basically, you write the same Lagrangians, but with bigger fibers, and you see what happens. And typically, you will see gravity, Jan-Mills there. But typically, you also see stuff you don't want to see there, some other fields. But it is possible, and there is some review of what is possible in this context in this paper. In terms of practical applications of these formalisms, it seems to me, from my experience of working with this, these chiral formalisms have the biggest hidden potential. They are simplest. They're really the best. And so probably, so I would say that person who implements the chiral Einstein Cartan on the computer will be very pleasantly surprised in how efficient it is. And finally, what next? This is my last minute. So we don't know. As I said, the motivation was, if we believe that maybe the sought theory is geometric, we don't know which of the geometries are more important. But what one way to summarize the content of all this was that gravity, one way to think about gravity is gauge theory with soldering. So this is my summary of all the talks. And so maybe this statement in some way survives in some future theory. But of course, we don't know. But of course, just by looking at these gravity formulations, one cannot, at least there is really no way, one doesn't know how to proceed. By just by, that is probably not enough information. But it may be possible that other pieces of available physical theories contain other clues. In particular, on Thursday, I'll give a talk where I talk about geometry of standard model fermions. It kind of fits with the what I described here, at least it fits in my mind. And it's a geometric description of standard model fermions, so that will happen on Thursday, and I will stop now. Thank you.
I'm surprised that in your conclusion you didn't mention generalized geometry.
Well, to explain why I should mention it, I would need another 4 hours.
Just as an opening act.
Yeah, but generalized geometry fits with what I was describing in this talk very well. Yes. It's the one of the ways to say it is that one can enlarge, one can change the nature of the soldering, and actually generalized geometry just fits into that picture very well.
So you said that the fact that there are so many different formulations is a hint. What is it a hint of?
I don't know. That's a question to you. So
what's your bet?
Yeah, what's your bet? What's my bet? Well, I think gravity is secretly trying to tell us something. So gravity is more than effective field theory. I think this is what it's trying to tell us. One should, there is some hint in it, and the fact that there are so many different reformulations of it is, it just trying to tell us, take me seriously. But I don't know how to take it more seriously. So there is, it seems that there is a bit more to it than effective field theory. Well, it's also geometry, right? It's, so it's, that is what is more to it. But what to make of that, I don't know.
I mean, here you classify the different
yes.
options by the soldering. But you could also classify the different options by the type of questions that mm-hmm. the formulations answer more mm-hmm. easily, mm-hmm. right? Which is another way to think about it. So, and then why, therefore, you prefer one mm-hmm. versus the other. It's based on which, so let's say, if you think about unification, if you think about discretizing the theory, if you think about, right, it leads to different, if you think about quantization, each one has a...
I would probably say that, I'd probably say that neither one of these should be taken very seriously, but somehow all together, they should be.
Is there like a well-defined answer to the question of like how many different formulations a theory can have? Because in some sense,
you can count.
If you want to be pessimistic, you could say these are just field redefinitions, right? And so I can always do lots of field redefinitions to a theory.
You really change the nature of the object that describes. So we are describing the same dynamical content, two propagating degrees of freedom, with so many different fields. With many objects of completely different geometric type. Content is unchanged. It's still these two propagating degrees of freedom. And we know that to describe this theory in flat space, actually, we don't need any Lagrangian. It's just two propagating degrees of freedom. They interact completely in a fixed way. The theory is completely nailed. It cannot be changed in any way. But if we want a Lagrangian formulation, well, there are all these possibilities.
Like, okay, could I answer the question, like, how do I know if I found all of the geometric description?
Probably this is not all, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure there is more.
Okay.
Sorry, maybe a related question is, can I study the space of soldering?
Space of soldering, probably not, because you see soldering can be, it can be mapped from tangent bundle to some vector bundle, it can be mapped from, I don't know, bivectors into some vector bundle. Just the nature of the soldering object can be so different. And these are very different types of soldering. They are both soldering in the sense that they relate the tangent bundle to the vector bundle, but they are of a completely different type.
About the last thing you said about the Lorentzian thing in 4D.
Mm-hmm.
So. Are there more, or has anyone studied more about it, and maybe the relation
You mean these modified theories in Lorentzian signature, or what? I'm not sure.
Modified. Yeah. Just the you were talking about GR, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's some point where you cannot do something. I don't remember what in Lorentzian.
Well, actually, everything for GR, I can do everything. So all these formalisms are good formalisms for GR, even in Lorentzian signature.
But then,
I cannot do something for modified theories.
Yeah, exactly. When you modify this F.
Then I cannot make sense of this as theories of Lorentzian signature metrics.
Yeah, exactly. But you can obtain a family of these modified theories,
yeah,
that correspond to GR in the Euclidean.
I can modify the theory and then ask, can I interpret it? Modification is easy, but then interpretation. I can interpret them as Euclidean and Lorentzian modified theories of gravity.
In terms of the degrees of freedom,
yeah,
propagating.
Yeah, well, nature of propagating in Euclidean and split signature is strange, right?
Yeah.
But in appropriate sense, the number of propagating degrees of freedom does not change in those signatures. But then if I try to interpret this theory as a modified theory of Lorentzian signature GR, I cannot. I can interpret it as a modified theory of complexified GR, that I can do. But I cannot take the slice that corresponds to Lorentzian signature. But if you're just interested in GR, then all these formalisms are good. You can work with them. You can do calculations. Yes?
If I remember correctly, one of your earlier motivations was to look at the normalization flow,
mm-hmm,
and to hope that in some formulations,
well, there
how
is
much in the various formulations.
Well, it's true that I was interested in these modified theories, uh-huh, because they seem to me to be kind of UV modifications of GR, a family of them, and I was hoping that I can understand why a member of this family is more preferable than any other member by studying the flow and then maybe seeing where the flow takes me. But actually, I found another way, simpler way, geometric way to understand why a member of this family is better than other member. But this has to do with some other type of geometry. So some geometry in seven dimensions, it turns out, is relevant. And I can see this modified. So my explanation of why these modified theories are there is because there is a certain theory, very simple theory, of three forms in seven dimensions. If you dimensionally reduce it to four dimensions, what you obtain is a modified theory of a very particular type with a very particular F of M. So that's the reason, that's my understanding now, why these theories exist.
We don't know much about the normalization.
No, we don't. No. No, we don't. We believe, I would believe that at one loop order, they are all renormalizable by field definitions like GIs. I would think that this is unchanged. This is kind of formulation independent. Of course, to check it, one would have to do really difficult calculation in some of the formula. In some formulations, this would be okay calculation, but in some other, it would be horrible calculation. So I wouldn't try it. But I would probably also expect that if you do two-loop calculation, the physics is the same. It's non-renormalizable at two loops in any of these formulations. Yeah.
I don't know if this is general, but in a couple of the formulations, you specified that the topological type of the vector bundle, which is related to this physical space by the Silverman form,
yeah,
is the same.
Yeah.
Is there ever like a natural physical motivation for changing the two?
That's a good question. But then in that case, this soldering can no longer be non-degenerate. It must be degenerate somewhere. So you will obtain very strange solutions. They will locally look like GR, but they will probably develop some singularities somewhere. This is a good question to look at. What kind of solutions one obtains this way? Yes.
Because in Young Mies at the quantum level, you have to sum over all the bundles for the partition function. So in fact,
so actually, we understand very little of what happens if you change the bundle. It's clear that it's still locally Einstein metric, but globally it does something weird. It becomes somewhere degenerate or something strange happens. And it's very interesting to understand what kind of change of bundle gives you what kind of singularities. Yes?
In the original formulation, I know how to write higher order curvature.
Yes.
How does that look like in the alternative formulations, and in particular the chiral formulations?
That's another good question.
Is there a natural way to...
This is less understood. No, I don't know. There we know Riemannian geometry well, and we know what kind of invariants are possible from Riemann curvature. This is much less understood, right? We work with different objects. We don't know, really understand what kind of scalars can be constructed. So I would say this is not known. Yes?
Do you know if the black hole entropy formulas are the same in all of these different formulations?
They will be different because the black hole entropy formula that you can obtain the black hole entropy formula from the action, right? The action is different, therefore the formula will be different. But of course they will have the same content. It will be always area of the horizon, appropriately expressed in terms of the basic fields that you have.
You add these boundary terms to the...
There might be modifications from the topological...
Okay, this has not been studied very well, yeah.
Yeah.
That's another obvious thing to study. Take the simplest possible of these formulations and see what happens with black hole entropy. That's a good project.
Yeah, the topological invariants do enter the...
The topological invariants do enter, yes, yeah.
Like the Euler.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
So the metric also, or the frame, they also appear in the matter sector, and they will modify the when the.
That's true. This is maybe what you're asking, is that some of these formulations are actually not at all suitable for coupling to matter. So for example, anytime you replace the frame field by two form, coupling to matter becomes problematic. Coupling to Jahn-Mills is easy still, but coupling to fermions becomes problematic because fermions really need the frame. So some of these formulations are only good for studying pure GR. You should say something. Yes. Thank you.